has not worked. I have reviewed the language of Measure 91, and it's very well written. I think it's a good bill.
Measure 91 regulates marijuana for adults, so police have time to fight serious, violent, and unsolved crime.
And here in Washington, wasteful arrests down, DUIs down, drug prevention programs are getting funds. Strict regulations are working. Here, it's really better already. Vote yes on 91.
Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Brooke Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Asked me to introduce Cheech and Chong. I said, how much? And they said, we don't pay for introductions. So I said, then I don't need this crummy gig. And they said, yes, you do. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, Cheech and Chong.
You didn't like her saxophone.
I didn't, but now Daddy's special medicine, which you must never use because it will ruin your life, lets Daddy see and hear magical things you will never experience. Ever.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, October 31st, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Happy Halloween. And for those of you listening in, I am dressed as Homer Simpson today. So I hope you're enjoying that on the webcam or on the replays. Also, we are just, 4 days away from legalizing marijuana in the state of Oregon. Woohoo! Really looking forward to that.
We need to keep medical marijuana legal. Whether you suffer from glaucoma or you just rented the Matrix, medical marijuana can make things fabulous, medically.
So having a good time here, as we usually do on Halloween day here on the Russ Belville Show, hoping you're having a great Halloween and that we get more treats than tricks this election. Make sure you tune in on Marijuana Election Night. It's Tuesday, November 4th. We'll be here starting at this time, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, covering the marijuana elections in 5 states, 1 territory, 1 district, and 57 cities and counties all across this great country of ours. We'll have live reporters in these locations giving us the updates on their polls as they close. We'll have the first election results of the night for you right here at 420radio.org. Make sure you tune in. We'll be here until the polls close and we know the results in Alaska. We're going from Guam to Alaska, from Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine, all the way down to the Sunshine State and everywhere in between. So tune in on Tuesday starting at 3 p.m. Pacific. All right, for today's show, we got all sorts of great stuff for you, including some October surprise election shenanigans. I just got this literally a half hour ago, a new op-ed piece by two former Multnomah County district attorneys where they just come out and outright lie about Measure 91. Two outright falsehoods plus a whole bunch of other scares and distortions. We'll bring that up in behind the headlines and show you why they are wrong. Also on the show today, we'll do some drug war data mining, take some more looks at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. And then half past for our cannabis cinema, we are going to play all 3 parts that we have so far of Nick Adino's Marijuana in Oregon, A New High, the documentary he's putting together featuring many folks, yours truly included, in the Oregon legalization movement. Then when we move on to hour two, Toker Talk Radio got a great radical rant coming up where our local news station, once again, another Sinclair-owned station. We told you about KTVL down in southern Oregon running basically a 5-minute free ad for the cops against Measure 91. Well, now we've got one here in northern Oregon, right here in Portland. K2 aired this cannabis in the classroom to scare the hell out of everyone before November 4th's election. So we'll debunk that in hour two. Plus, we'll have a little bit more fun and frolic on this Halloween night. Hope you enjoy it. Also, make sure you stay tuned later tonight, 8 p.m. Pacific, for the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Herb will be in. We'll be playing lots of great metal, and he's got some great footage that he took yesterday. I can't wait to hear about it. We'll talk to him in hour two as well in our Daily Toker Tunes. But up next, we've got the 420 Radio News. great news on polling here in Oregon, and more. We're back right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
.420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups.
It's time. Time to vote yes on Measure 91. Oregon judges, prosecutors, and law enforcement agree Measure 91 is the better approach to marijuana.
Vote yes on 91.
Oregon teachers, moms, and drug treatment professionals say
Vote yes on 91.
Newspapers agree Oregonians should vote yes on Measure 91. It's straightforward and sensible. It's time to legalize marijuana. Join your fellow Oregonians. Vote yes on 91.
420radio.org is proud to replay Weegicated Talk Radio with Ruby Lexington, Nikki Fox, Steve the Caregiver, and Jeff Kaufman from Arizona. Weegicated exists to help change the cultural response to cannabis through intelligent, meaningful conversations about how the industry is unfolding in America and beyond. Catch the replay Mondays at 10 Pacific on 420.
In 2012, Washington State voted to regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana. I was for it. Well, the evidence keeps coming in. Our new approach is working. Month by month, tax dollars are going to schools and police, not the drug cartels. Wasteful arrests are way down, DUIs are down, drug prevention programs are getting funds. Strict regulations are working. Here, it's really better already. It's your vote, not mine, but it's working here.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Friday, October 31st, 2014. The latest K2 Survey USA poll shows Oregon's Measure 91 leading by a 52% to 41% margin, with 9% undecided. This poll jibes with a previous OPB Fox 12 poll showing that same 52% support and countering a recent Elway poll showing Measure 91 trailing 44 to 46%. The Elway poll consisted of just over 400 voters, 71% of them over the age of 50, while the K2 poll contacted 552 voters who have already turned in their ballots, 40% of likely voters, or are very likely to, with 60% of them over the age of 50 or older. 70% of the respondents were contacted by landline telephone. As usual, men's support for legalization at 56% beats women's support by 7 points, and people under age 35 overwhelmingly support legalization at 71%. Interestingly, baby boomer support, age 50 to 64, comes in at 61%, while Generation X, age 35 to 49, is evenly split at 46%. A pair of investing tycoons traded giddy text messages this spring as they planned to unload a massive haul of hyped-up shares in GrowLife, a supplier to pot farmers that has come under regulatory scrutiny. Quote, "April 10 is your day. Buy two houses in Miami," end quote. David Weiner, a Los Angeles-based penny stock financier, texted to fellow investor Fred Knoll. The plan for a big payday was thwarted at the last minute, however, when the Securities and Exchange Commission halted trading of GrowLife stock at 50 cents a share before the stock opened for trading on April 10. The SEC's concern, according to sources, has been that GrowLife, along with other pot companies, was pumping its business prospects in press releases, even as it issued millions of shares at below market prices in exchange for loans from financiers, including Weiner and Knoll. When GrowLife shares resumed trading 2 weeks after the halt, they opened 60% lower at 21 cents. They've steadily tumbled since, closing at 5.2 cents on Wednesday. A Grand Rapids doctor involved in a major marijuana conspiracy admitted he wrote medical marijuana prescriptions for patients he never met to help further a criminal enterprise that earned more than $1.3 million in less than 2 years. Thursday's plea came just hours before the U.S. Attorney's Office in Grand Rapids filed a 23-page superseding indictment charging four more people in the two-and-a-half-year conspiracy. That brings to 10 the number of people charged as part of the year-long investigation into illegal grow operations in Kent County. At the head of the conspiracy is Betty Lee Jenkins and her partner, Philip Joseph Walsh, investigators allege. Both were charged Thursday in superseding indictment with conspiracy to manufacture 100 or more marijuana plants and maintaining a drug-involved premises. A political agreement in Denmark has been reached to distribute research funds to study the medicinal effects of cannabis. Despite numerous pushes by Copenhagen's mayor, Frank Jensen, to legalize cannabis in the capital and the booming business in Christiania's cannabis market, Denmark has taken an official hardline stance on cannabis for both recreational and medicinal use. But signs have been emerging over the past few years that the nation may be prepared to adjust its stance on cannabis. Following a World Health Organization report in July that called for the decriminalization of all drugs, parties ranging from the ruling Social Democrats to the Libertarian Liberal Alliance and the left-wing Socialist People's Party said that it is high time to reconsider Denmark's official position on drugs. A research agreement that distributes 857 million kroner, or $145 million, to a wide variety of projects has earmarked money for studying the benefits of medicinal cannabis for the first time. Besides marijuana, Oregon voters will also decide whether to legalize growing hemp in the upcoming election. In addition to legalizing, regulating, and taxing marijuana, Measure 91 would compel the State Department of Agriculture to start handing out permission to farmers to get into the hemp industry. BMW has recently begun using hemp fibers in its cars because it's cheaper and more sustainable than fiberglass. China is moving away from cotton in favor of hemp because it takes half the water to grow the same amount. Canadians have a 20-year lead on us in hemp research and make $500 million per year. This has been your 420 Radio News for Friday, October 31st, 2014. I'm Homer Simpson. Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
Did I go to the high school with that guy? Who is that guy? Oh no, he's like an actor. Right, what has he been in? In the time it takes you to figure out who I am, you could fill out a ballot and mail it. Just do it. It'll take you 10 seconds, and then you can find out, you know, oh, that's right, that's Tate Donovan. He was in that thing, right? He's an actor.
Oh, hi. I guess I didn't see you there. My name is Ryan, and I'm just an average college voter. Caught me here reading my favorite book. You know, reading is really sexy. But you know what else is sexy? Taxing marijuana and using the revenue for education. That's why I'm voting yes on Measure 91.
I don't care for marijuana, but I do care about my family and their future. The system's not working now, so I think I'm voting yes on 91. Now, one small mistake getting caught with a little marijuana can ruin a life. A record, can't get loans, jobs, or credit, that's wrong. Measure 91 will regulate marijuana and generate tax revenue dedicated to police and schools, and let police protect us from serious crimes. Yes on 91 is a better approach.
Welcome back, everybody. 14 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines. Today's headline is an opinion piece called What Voters Should Know About Measure 91, Guest Opinion. The guest opinion is written by Norm Frink, a retired chief deputy district attorney for Multnomah County, right here, and Mark McDonnell, the retired senior deputy district attorney for Multnomah County. They came out early on this year in opposition to marijuana legalization, so this is no surprise to hear from these guys. What is surprising is to hear some of the lies that they promulgate in this opinion piece. We'll tackle them for you right now. They say, as voters are deciding, we believe they should have the type of information that has not been presented by the 30-second spots that dominate television. Here are the things that Measure 91 does not do. Unlike Washington State's legalization measure, Measure 91 does not make changes in the driving under the influence law to address driving under the influence of marijuana, nor does it provide additional funding for law enforcement and particularly the state crime lab in this critical area. That's an outright falsehood. First of all, Oregon's Measure 91 designates or mandates that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission study marijuana impaired driving and recommend to legislators any change that needs to be made. We can't study or know what the scientific value of marijuana impaired driving is until we get it legal and we direct our government to study it. And as far as funding for law enforcement, hell yes, it gives funding for law enforcement. 35%, 20% of that to the state police, 15% to city and county cops, and a large proportion of that to hire and train more drug recognition experts. They continue by saying, there is no requirement for a person to obtain a permit, keep records, account for, or collect taxes for private marijuana grows and sales. Well, first of all, a private grow is a private grow. That's exactly the way it's treated in Colorado. And no sales are allowed from your private grow. There are no private sales. You have to be a licensed retailer or wholesaler in order to sell marijuana in Oregon under Measure 91. It's another outright lie. They also say, there's no special funding or educational plan for addressing the problem of expanded marijuana exposure to minors. Again, Measure 91 designates 25% of its tax resources to drug prevention and treatment, particularly how to prevent teens from getting their hands on marijuana and better educational campaigns. They also say that there's far too much marijuana. Unlike the Washington State statute, Measure 91 would allow private citizens to possess up to 8 ounces of marijuana, 4 mature plants, 16 ounces of homemade marijuana products in solid form, and 72 ounces in liquid form. Look, guys, the amounts that Measure 91 allows for public possession, for edibles, and for tinctures are exactly the same as Washington State. And the amounts they allow for home possession, plant cultivation, and concentrates are lower than what they are in Colorado. They also continue with the worry about marijuana potency. They say because the potency of marijuana has increased exponentially in recent years, exponentially would mean a curve that approaches infinity, and that is not at all true. It's maybe raised 2 to 3 times over the past 3 decades, but whatever. I don't expect them to be mathematicians. Measure 91 says, what is a private marijuana grower to do with all that excess marijuana? Measure 91 allows private citizens to sell up to 1 ounce of usable marijuana and 16 ounces of homemade marijuana products in solid form and 72 ounces in liquid form. That's absolutely untrue. Measure 91 does not allow private citizens to sell marijuana. You will have to be a licensed retailer or wholesaler under the regulations of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Another outright lie about Measure 91. And then they finish by saying, Colorado's governor was asked recently what he would say to those in other states that are considering legalizing marijuana. His answer was that it would be reckless before we see what the consequences are there. And yet, Governor Hickenlooper walked back those comments the very next day. Funny how nobody ever refers to that part. This is nothing but these DAs throwing every scare they can out and hoping that some of them will stick. The scare about what about the children, what about the minors, they continually forget to mention that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission will be empowered to prohibit any advertising or marketing to children. They continue with these scares about the marijuana-infused edibles, despite the fact that since 1996, there has been legalized marijuana in this country in the form of medical marijuana in California, which our opponents keep saying is Wild West, wide open, anybody can get it. You'd have thought if somebody was going to give out a marijuana-infused treat on Halloween, it would have happened by now since 1996, since 18 years, since we now have 23 medical marijuana states. But just like the razor blades in the Snickers bar or the poisoned apples, we have yet to see a single verifiable case of this ever happening in history. The scaremongering has got to stop. People need to be rational and think about this. Marijuana is here in the state of Oregon. It will never go anywhere. There are 108,000 of us, 21 years and older, who are using marijuana 2 out of 3 days or more. 108,000 of us. There are 314,000 of us that are using marijuana every month, and 436,000 of us that are using marijuana every year. 436,000 Oregonians who will get their marijuana from somewhere. They'll get it from a criminal, they'll cheat the medical marijuana program, or they'll drive across the river to Vancouver and get it. And we've seen that Washington State's number one and number two best-selling pot shops are in Vancouver. Why should our tax money cross the river? Vote yes on Measure 91. It's about time.
Oh,
well, time for a break. It's 4:20 in Colorado. Like, anyone is going to... You can take $20 and buy 5 pounds of candy to give out to kids, or one Chiba Chew. Like, we're going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to poison the kids. Donut.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get high, Lee educated. The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit mjba.net to join today. That's mjba.net. 420radio.org presents Electric Bob's Boogaloo with Electric Bob from Scottsdale, Arizona. Electric Bob expands the Russ Belville Show's Electric Tuesday into a full show featuring the best in electronic dance music and experimental music. New every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Pacific with replays Tuesday at 5 and 8 Pacific on 420radio.org. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about 7 people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining. All right, welcome back, everybody. 22 after the hour, and in the Drug War Data Mine today, we're going to take a look at some figures from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. And today, I want to concentrate on the differences of alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana, and the rates that have changed in a state-by-state from state to state, I should say. This will make use of the National Survey on Drug Use and Health's 2-year RDAS, which we've looked at in the past. It's a great set of data from the survey that breaks things down on a state-by-state basis. Now, logging into this, you'll just have to use some Google account to log in. We'll get ourselves logged in there, and that will authenticate us, take us to a page for us to accept the terms, I believe, should pop up here any second. Sorry I didn't get this prepared in advance, but now here we go. So again, we'll be working with row, column, control, and selection filters. Our first selection filter is going to be age of 21 to 103, because again, we're going to work with data values for just adults. I don't like having kids in there to skew what we're talking about. And then state 41 is the state of Oregon. So this will apply only to Oregon adults. What we're going to look for is the rates of marijuana, tobacco, and alcohol use among adults. And to be able to pull this down, in the row variables, you can just start typing. And marijuana is always MRJ. And if you type MRJ, it starts to fill things in for you. And we can find ever used marijuana, yearly use of marijuana. Let's go with monthly use of marijuana. And then we can go and run that. And to find that information, we will see
on a year-by-year basis. So looking down to our first set of years here, forgot one variable. We've got to add a control variable for the year pair indicator, YRPRIND. That'll divide it by the 2002s, the 2004s, the 2006, and so on. Forgot that variable. But we run that table, and we'll get the information we want. I'm going to get rid of the bar chart just so that we can see just the data and revise that display. And as we scroll down the data for marijuana, we see among adults in 2002, 9.1% of Oregon adults, or 227,000 of them, were using marijuana in the past month. 7.7% the next 2 years, 7.4 the next two, 8.7 the next two. And then in 2010, 2011, 11.1% of Oregonians, adults 21 and older, or 314,000. So we've seen a number that has dipped and then risen pretty substantially from 2008 to 2010. Now, what's nice about coming up with a table like that, and gosh, I should scoot that over a bit so you can see it a little better. Let me see if I can get that screen fixed a bit for you. That ought to do it. But if we also go back and change the MRJ to an ALC, which is your prefix for alcohol, you'll see similar types of fields, and we can find the how many times used in the past month. I pass that one, all right. Alcohol tried, total number of days in the past 12 months. Where are we going to find that? Recency of alcohol use. Here we go. Past year, past month, and run that kind of information. Oh, we've got an error in that one. Let's see if I can figure this one out. Let's try ALC Mon. Do we have ALC Mon available? Yes, that's the variable I was looking for. So sorry about that. So ALC Mon. Oh, trying to clear the other variable. There we go. ALC Mon. Enter and run that table. We'll clear our bar chart out of there. No chart. Revise the display, and the information we'll get there will tell us alcohol use. That shows us that 57.4% of Oregonians used alcohol in 2002, went to 62, to 61, to 65, and now is up to 65.9%. Almost two out of three Oregonians drink. Finally, for tobacco, TOBmon should give us the monthly tobacco use of any type of tobacco, chewing tobacco, smoked tobacco. And notice that as I do this, it'll open up a separate tab for each one of these. So it's very easy to go from tab to tab to find your information. What we find is 31% of Oregonians smoking or using tobacco in 2002, a number that is down to 27.8% as of 2010. You can do this with your state just by changing the state variable. Plug that into the row to be able to find out what number corresponds with your state. If you need help, email me, russ@radicalrust.com.
420 Radio, the world's voice.
Our daughter Rebecca could have a seizure at any given time that could take her life.
When you have 200 seizures a day, she gets so scared.
I've learned a lot about the benefits of medical marijuana in the treatment of intractable epilepsy in children. We feel her saying to us, Mom, Dad,
help me.
When is this going to stop? Why don't you, my parents who love me, do something? And we can't.
Please help us help our daughter.
Our daughter Rebecca needs all options for medical marijuana, so please vote yes on Amendment 2.
Congressman Andy Harris thinks it's okay for medical marijuana patients to go to federal prison, even though Maryland passed a medical marijuana bill in April. On May 30th, Congressman Harris voted against an amendment to respect Maryland laws and protect Maryland patients. Why would Congressman Harris vote to send patients like this to prison? 72% of Maryland residents support medical marijuana. Is Congressman Harris out of touch with Maryland?
Treating marijuana as a crime in Oregon has failed. Police are spending way too much time working on simple marijuana possession cases. Too many people are being busted. Oregon wastes millions of taxpayer dollars while illegal drug dealers are making a huge untaxed profit. But after Measure 91 passes, we'll have a better approach, a smarter approach, like what's happening in Washington, where marijuana-related arrests have plummeted. Oregon police will be able to refocus their precious and limited resources on serious crime, and Oregon's Measure 91 can save and generate millions of dollars. Oregon needs a better approach to marijuana. Vote yes on Measure 91. Paid for by Yes on 91.
As marijuana moves into the mainstream, more filmmakers are taking a look at all aspects of cannabis culture. These days, marijuana movies are about more than hiding from Sergeant Stadenko or trying to get to White Castle for the munchies. Join with us as we explore the latest in the cannabis cinema.
Here's the film Marijuana in Oregon from Nick
Adenow. Measure 91 regulates, legalizes, and taxes marijuana like beer and wine. It will establish license rules and regulations, very much how the Oregon Liquor Control Commission regulates Oregon's microbreweries, allow for limited home cultivation and possession, saving law enforcement resources, and generating revenue from the taxes from the licensed and regulated stores. My name is Anthony Johnson. I am the chief petitioner of Measure 91, working to regulate, legalize, and tax marijuana like beer and wine.
Oregon, known for its microbreweries, running shoes, and Christmas trees, is also notorious for its production and consumption of cannabis. Historically, Oregon has had some of the most progressive cannabis laws in the United States. Led by Republican Governor Tom McCall, the individual possession of weed under an ounce was decriminalized in 1973. In 1998, Oregon passed OMA, the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, which created the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. This allowed patients with severe medical needs to possess and consume marijuana. The Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, or OMMP, grants cards to patients, caregivers, and growers. Patients can designate a caregiver to possess and transport their medicine. Patients also have the option to grow themselves or designate a grower to produce medicine for them. Each patient can possess up to 24 ounces of consumable marijuana and grow up to 6 mature plants.
I'm Jeff Sugarman. I'm a political consultant and have worked in Oregon for about 25 years. And in 1998, I ran the campaign to pass the original Medical Marijuana Act. At the same time, in that same election, there was also a ballot measure to roll back a law the legislature had passed to recriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana. So we were actually able to do both of those, pass the bill authorizing OMA and defeat the effort to recriminalize marijuana.
In 2013, Jeff Sugarman and his partner, Sam Chapman, co-authored House Bill 3460, which allowed existing and future medical marijuana dispensaries to sell medicine to caregivers and patients.
We were really actually addressing the problem of 200 dispensaries operating in Oregon and an oversupply of medical marijuana that was finding its way into the black market. And in the end, I think that's what caused us to be successful.
Measure 91 will not be the first time marijuana legalization is on Oregon's ballot. In 2012, Measure 80 failed by a margin of 46-53%. Measure 80, unlike Measure 91, would have allowed the unlimited cultivation and possession of cannabis.
While that initiative was very well intended, it included some things that I think made it very difficult for a lot of opinion leaders, a lot of editorial boards, and in the end, a lot of Oregonians to support it. Once they were on the ballot, they had no campaign behind it. There was no funding for advertising. There was no field campaign. There was no effort to really talk to voters. And historically, on any issue, ballot measures tend to lose support as you get closer and closer to the election. So if you start in the mid-50s, you're very likely to end up losing. It's one of the challenges that the legalization campaign faces this time, but with Measure 91, they have a full-blown campaign, very good professional staff working on it, and a very well-funded campaign. So I think the end result is going to be quite different.
Measure 91 will allow adults 21 and over to possess 8 ounces of usable marijuana. Also, it will be the first state to allow home cultivation of up to 4 mature plants. If Measure 91 passes, the rules and regulations will be written by 3 state entities: the Oregon Health Authority, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and the Department of Agriculture.
Since the 2012 election, advocates have met with legislators, policymakers, concerned citizens, tax experts, lawyers, to really craft a measure that could gain the support from moderate mainstream voters.
The campaign for Measure 91 promotes four main arguments for legalization. They claim Measure 91 will create a regulated system that reduces teen consumption and will bring justice to nonviolent drug offenders who are cited or arrested for marijuana. It also believes legalization will allow law enforcement resources to be spent on more urgent criminal matters. In combination with better allocation of resources and the proposed tax scheme, advocates estimate millions of dollars of revenue for Oregon. Spokespeople for the opposition claim legalization will lead to higher teen use and more dangerous roads due to stoned drivers.
Marijuana is available today, unlicensed, unregulated, untested, untaxed, and so we need to come up with a way to bring it into a regulated market. This is about what's a better policy for Oregon. That when you go to vote, you know, yes on 91, you're not promoting marijuana. You're promoting regulation of marijuana.
To better understand how legalization in Oregon under Measure 91 will be different than Washington and Colorado, we spoke to longtime activist and radio host Russ Belville, also known as Radical Russ.
The number one thing that's different about Oregon is that we're not first. With Colorado and Washington, they had to labor under the fact that nobody on earth had ever legalized marijuana before. And so going into that, you're asking voters to approve an abstract, and we can guess what might happen, but we really can't prove what might happen because it's never happened before. Oregon gets the benefit of going second. We can look at Washington and Colorado and see what didn't work. For example, high taxes didn't work, so we put low taxes in. Vertical integration didn't work, so we didn't vertically integrate. The driving while impaired standards were unscientific and unreliable, so we didn't include them. Vertical integration is this idea that all of the production, processing, wholesaling, and retailing of marijuana is largely handled by one entity. In Colorado, they initially started their program requiring vertical integration in that the retail marijuana shop had to grow at least 70% of what it was selling. This was one of the problems with their legalization because those shops couldn't produce enough to meet demand, and that led to higher prices, as much as $500 an ounce in some places in Colorado. In Washington state, they specifically made it so you could not vertically integrate. You could be a grower, or you could be a retailer processor, but you couldn't be both. Well, that's laden with problems too. In Oregon, I think we're going to have the best possible situation because it's going to be, we're going to allow the market to dictate exactly how this should work.
We traveled to Astoria, Oregon to sit down with one of the most outspoken opponents of Measure 91.
My name is Josh Marquis. I'm the district attorney in Clatsop County. I have a variety of sort of passions. They include drunk driving, prosecution and prevention, victims' rights, truth in sentencing, some issues regarding capital punishment. And to be honest, marijuana is not one of my passions, but I did volunteer to be one of the district attorneys to speak out on what has become a much more controversial issue than I ever thought it would be. The experience that I draw on the most is Colorado's, because it's been around the longest and been the most significant. They've seen a drastic increase in when they test people who've been involved in DUI or crashes for the presence of marijuana. Now, does that necessarily mean marijuana causes the crash? No, but it's clear that a lot more people, because of its availability, are using marijuana and driving.
And as far as who are the people that are gonna start smoking marijuana, one of the big scares is, oh my God, the kids. But what about the children? The kids are gonna start smoking pot. Well, look, folks, the kids already have access to pot. So the total for annual use for people under the age of 21 is 26.3%. That's more than one out of four young Oregonians that are using marijuana on an annual basis. So they've already got their access. The kids can already get marijuana. It's the middle-aged guy like me who doesn't have a guy who can't get marijuana. It's a middle-aged guy like me who's not a medical marijuana patient who can't go to a dispensary who can't get marijuana. Well, being afraid of marijuana and driving would be really scary if legalization invented marijuana and driving. Fact is, marijuana's existed for a long time now, cars have existed for a long time now, and while they shouldn't do it, people have driven stone for a long time now. The road fatality rates in Washington and Colorado are far lower than the national average. Right now in Washington, it's 0.77 fatalities per 100 million miles driven. Colorado, it's 1.01. The national average is 1.31. We have seen the rates of auto fatalities in the states that have embraced medical marijuana fall at a greater rate than the states that did not. A lot of this is attributed to a substitution effect, people substituting marijuana for alcohol, and marijuana is less harmful than alcohol, so we see less deaths on the road.
If you drive a vehicle after smoking marijuana, you're doing it at extreme risk, and this gets a little complicated. Marijuana is different from all the other substances that we're concerned about people driving on, in the sense that THC bonds to fat cells in a different way. So for example, if you drink alcohol, we have a machine that can measure pretty much exactly what your level is. If you're taking oxycodone or Valium or Xanax, we can test your urine and pretty much tell when and how much you took. We can do the same with marijuana. The problem is that the result doesn't necessarily tell us that you're impaired. It might tell us that you consumed it within 2 hours or 2 days or 2 weeks. So the danger for the community is that people will drive under the influence of marijuana and cause harm to themselves or others. The danger to the individual is if you get in a wreck and you test positive for marijuana, you may in fact end up being charged.
Whether Measure 91 passes or not, cannabis will continue to be possessed, consumed, and sold in Oregon. It's now up to Oregon voters to decide where marijuana is sold, how it's distributed, and ultimately who profits off of sales.
Once Oregon passes this and a couple of other states do, I think you're just going to see it sweep across the country and it's going to be done. We may lose a battle or two as we move forward, but the war is over.
And in the future, I think more people are going to start having proprietary strains and giving them more mainstream names versus the names that they've kind of come with. Growers need a voice. We can't just sit back and let people just figure out how this is going to be. You know, the growers, who the people who are in charge of creating this medicine for patients and then the future recreational market, should have one of the strongest voices, in my opinion, in how things are going to be done, because they understand the plant.
Many people in the current marijuana industry have mixed feelings about the free market approach of Measure 91. We talked to a few noteworthy Oregon marijuana business people. First up was Sam Chapman, a prominent marijuana entrepreneur who is the founder and advisor of New Economy Consulting.
I think that the future of the cannabis industry in Oregon is bright. I really think that there's a lot of ideals here in the Pacific Northwest in general that are going to be injected into the branding of cannabis here in Oregon. I am all about a free market approach when it comes to, you're given the chance, there's a low barrier to entry, anyone can try it. You know, you can have your millionaire come in and lose all of his money and totally screw it up because he picked the wrong business partner, or the mom and pop that comes in that totally puts their entire family as, you know, the aspect of why they do what they do and just blow it out of the water, right? That's the beauty about a free market model and legalization, is that everybody gets to play.
We also spoke to Amy Margolis, Oregon's leading marijuana lawyer.
I think Oregon has been a state for a long time that has valued small-scale production. So I think there's some fear from people in the industry, and I think some people view that as a real opportunity to grow a business from something they've been really dedicated to for a long time. So I mean, think for Oregon, vertical integration means the opportunity to build something big and great if recreational passes, and at the same time, a potential loss for people who have been operating on a small scale and maybe want to keep operating that way.
The battle between fake weed and small-scale businesses will not end anytime soon. One thing is for sure, until legalization happens, we don't know who will dominate the market in both Oregon and nationwide. Regardless of the size of marijuana businesses, everyone is dealing with the same issue of filing federal taxes. The issue is due to a federal provision titled 280E.
280E exists because some coke dealer in Florida in the 1970s decided that he was going to try and write off his yacht with all of his coke money. And then the federal government was like, oh shit, we should probably make a law to not make that legal. Even if it's an illegal drug, you're supposed to report your taxes on that, like, by law. But if you don't, you break the law, right? So, I mean, that's the conundrum with taxes until we fix it at the federal level.
What did help federally was a memo that was issued in 2013 by United States Deputy Attorney General James M. Cole, known as the Cole Memo.
We agree it is an issue that we need to deal with.
You know, the federal memo that came out when Washington, Colorado legalized marijuana said that, look, if you, so long as you follow these eight guidelines, which are basically don't sell to kids, don't go across state lines, don't mix it with guns, right, and a couple of other things, we're not coming after you.
It would be a very challenging lawsuit to bring to preempt the state's decriminalization law. We might have an easier time with their regulatory scheme in preemption, but then what you'd have is legalized marijuana and no enforcement mechanism within the state to try and regulate it. And that's probably not a good situation to have.
Kind of an incentive for a black market, isn't it?
Very much so, sir. And money going into organized criminal enterprises instead of going into state tax coffers and having the state regulate from a seed-to-sale basis what happens to it.
It'd be basically everything the state voted for you'd be trying to overturn.
For the first time, the state of Oregon and all of its residents finally had some tacit protection from federal raids. You know, we'd seen a lot of raids in Southern Oregon, things of that nature, and so it's good to finally be past that part, although the raids are over.
The Cole memo could change with a different White House administration. In the meantime, growers and businesses who follow state laws are safe. However, there is still a large amount of underground growers who exist in Oregon. Many of these growers live outside of the Portland metropolitan area and are more commonly found in Southern Oregon.
Oregon ships, I don't think it's a secret, vast quantities of cannabis across the United States. I don't think there's any question that that's happening. I think it's happening because there's no legal market and people could stay here and not be afraid of getting arrested. I think that all that cannabis would stay here, at least as much as the market can absorb. And so I think my perspective is that legalization will end at least a good portion of that black market.
A mixture of growers in Southern Oregon that, you know, some of them definitely see what's coming. They want to be in, you know, the big cannabis aspect of it. They probably produce the amounts that fit the cannabis needs. But then you have the other growers who are just totally anti-government, anti-regulation. If there's a tax on it, they're completely against it. You know, and it will eventually harm their bottom line because a lot of Southern Oregon growers ship their stuff out of state because they make a living off of that. Regulation and more laws and more attention for them is bad. You know, there's definitely tensions there. Will people get over it? Yeah, like, you know, the market is going to decide. And then the question is, do you want to play by the rules of the market or not? You do not have to play by the rules of the market. And you can still make money, but it will be harder and harder as these laws get passed across the country and the government gets involved in making the rules for your game. And if you do not follow the rules of the game of the government, you eventually lose. You know, it'll be unfortunate for the people that weren't willing to kind of change their model and really kind of accept the fact that government intervention in the cannabis industry is here to stay.
As the U.S. government gets more involved with the rules and regulations of the marijuana industry, established cannabis trade associations are being created. Amy Margolis spoke about her role in creating the Oregon Growers Association.
So we started the Oregon Growers Association as an offshoot of the PAC. The PAC is the political arm, right? It does what every other PAC does, which is donate money and fund lobbying efforts. The production piece of this is the foundation of the entire industry, and that growers, there are more growers than there are processors and dispensary owners and edible producers. That doesn't mean that they're more valuable necessarily. It just means there's a huge quantity of people providing cannabis. And so part of what the Oregon Growers Association is setting out to do is allow those people an opportunity to connect with each other. It's allowing them an opportunity to feel that this isn't an industry that needs to be continually underground. Our hope is to provide education, networking, outreach, the things that regular trade associations do for their members.
The tax model under Measure 91 is placed at the grower level. it will result in $35 an ounce on flower, $10 an ounce on shake and trim, and $5 for an immature plant. Measure 91 does not allow cities or counties to add any additional taxes. The transition into a government-regulated system necessitates a higher level of professionalism and marketing strategies. We talked to an Oregon grower who is developing a brand he hopes to integrate into the recreational market.
My name is Christian Koch, and I'm a medical marijuana grower. The brand is called Hi-Fi Farms. You know, the goal is to produce 100% organic, as sustainable as we possibly can. The pursuit is, you know, this should all be sun-grown in greenhouses with the finest organics and most high-tech systems we have today. And our goal is to get there, you know, sooner than later. But in the meantime, you know, the focus is right now is just to be as consistent with the quality and really try to start educating the consumers through social media. We're gonna start producing videos. So our brand is really focused on trying to educate people and then be the best, you know, and then by teaching them what is the best, ideally they choose us. I'm not interested in 500 products. I'd rather have one product that's so amazing that people just want it and feel good about buying it. And that's sort of the pursuit of Hi-Fi.
It is a green rush. There's absolutely lots of money to be made, but there's a lot of good things that can be done with that money and through cannabis in general, through, you know, medical aspects, through changing the social justice perceptions and laws, and, you know, removing the idea that nonviolent drug offenders are criminals and replacing it with, you know, if there are serious problems, they're health problems there, right? They're not criminal problems.
There's an irony about cannabis. I know there's all these stories and people get bent out with too much, but the right edible cannabis dose is perfect. Let's be honest about it. There is a classic story that a lot of people end up having where they have too much edible cannabis. So it's just on us to be as responsible as possible and produce packaging and instructions that are as clear and exact as possible.
Over the past 2 years, the demand for edibles and concentrates has increased significantly. Many claim they are driving most of the sales in the OMMP.
The expansion of edibles and concentrates has grown with the expansion of retail storefronts, right? Now that we're able to have these stores and really start producing varieties, and we have an outlet in which people are kind of coming through every day, and it's a system that's really starting to get its feet cemented in the ground and work out all the kinks, new products are coming online all the time.
Concentrates have gotten a bad rap due to the media's emphasis on the dangers of amateur processing. However, the creation of concentrates can be safe and effective if done professionally. We spoke to Alex, owner of Mad Pharma, to give us a little insight into concentrate processing.
Trim comes into the door, gets processed, frozen. We run it through our extraction machine. It's a closed-loop system, which means all the gas being used for extraction process get recycled 99.9%. So we literally reuse all the gas many, many times, so there's absolutely no gas waste. After it gets extracted into the oil, goes into the ovens. We purge on a very low temperature for a very long time. We completely remove all the residual gases, so it's just a clean medicine. If you get a gram of concentrate can last you probably, I would say, maybe 15, maybe even 20 grams of flower. So it's a much smaller packaging, much more discreet. So if you're using a vape pen is just like a regular e-cigarette pen, so it's much more discreet, much stronger. So you need a hit, maybe two, rather than smoking maybe a whole bowl or even somebody smokes a whole joint.
You know, there's been a lot of negative press around concentrates, mainly because of the method that it's produced. A lot of concentrates are produced through a method called open blasting, which is literally you pack a glass tube full of cannabis and you put a rubber band, a screen on the end of it, and you blast a can of butane through it. And essentially that is a very dangerous method because there's gases left over and people blow themselves up, right? So there's a clear public safety issue with the creation of concentrates and the make it in your basement garage type model that we are working on addressing.
So amateur extraction blow-ups. So there's many, many, many blow-up labs that there's just gas evaporating everywhere. So you have to do it outside, or if you do it inside, it has to be extremely extreme amount of exchange air inside a room. And then when they blow, they don't extract the gas good enough. So it's not really a medicine. If it has too much gas, it's not good for you. It can be really medicine. Which in a closed loop system, the way that we do it, all the gas gets extracted. So we save 99% of the gas. So there's absolutely no gas being wasted into the atmosphere. And then purging system. So before we ever pull the oil out of our system, it already has been purged twice through the vacuum. So it comes out much cleaner, much better.
Opponents of marijuana legalization often point to the dangers of edibles because of their potency. We sat down with a professional edible maker to learn about edible cannabis.
So I'm Daniel Stoops. My company is Dan O'Dan Grassworks. The first step is to make the butter. Everything begins with the butter. I access high quality flour and trim. I make large batches of butter by the pound. And I make versions for each strength or potency that I have. It's butter first, and then the caramel is second. And the blocks can be refrigerated or frozen forever. They can come out and get cut up, as you saw today, and packaged and bagged up and go to the dispensaries. That's the gist.
In the current system, every item sold in the OMMP is tested for molds, pesticides, and levels of THC, CBD, and other chemical compounds.
If and when 91 passes, it'll be the same for molds and pesticides and potency. I think those are very standard. I don't think there needs to be much changing, and I can't imagine there's going to be a lot of impetus to add more testing. It's really pretty adequate what they're requiring. I use source cannabis in flour and trim form, and a certain amount goes into my butter to achieve the right potency. And I've been able to basically use math. Depending on how strong the source grains are, I know exactly how much to put in order to achieve X amount of milligrams per piece and X amount of milligrams per bag, within 5%.
There's liability on both sides of the fence here right now because the industry is so young. It is the responsibility of the patient or the person consuming the cannabis product to know what you're eating, right? You know, you don't go buy the fifth or half gallon of Everclear thinking that you're going to be able to down it like it's a, you know, 2 liter of Coke, right? I mean, that's, you know, you know something about that product before you use it, right? And the same is to be said about cannabis. On the other side, it is understandable that because it is a new industry and that people can make assumptions on their own, and that sometimes when they walk into a store, they're not educated. You will always have someone that will walk into a place and just buy whatever they want and be like, I eat pans of brownies all the time, so I'm going to eat 3 of these brownies, and, you know, they have a bad time.
Shortly after Washington passed their legalization measure, edibles and concentrates were temporarily banned to refine regulations.
I do think we're past the bulk of that. I think there's a more calm response right now. I think the manufacturers are responding by coming up with very distinct servings in Colorado. I think it's a max of 100 milligrams in the bag or in the package, 10 milligrams per serving. That's a fine development. I'm okay with that. In terms of banning edibles, again, I don't see it. I think we're all going to be responsible enough, and I think the manufacturers are going to respond by being very responsible and putting together nice labeling and data and making sure that someone who buys that package, whether it's a patient in the OMMP world or in the rec world, if 91 passes, they're going to have the information they need to know exactly how much they need to take to have a nice, nice experience.
There's a lot of pros to the edible market. It allows the older demographic that is not necessarily keen on smoking or smelling or anybody knowing anything about their cannabis use at all to eat and ingest on top of the people who just can't physically smoke. There's a lot of ailments out there that do not allow you to inhale cannabis, and that it's maybe, you know, just bad for you to do it in that kind of method. And so edibles are really kind of taking things to the next level and allowing people to be discreet and kind of opening doors for people that had otherwise stigmatized marijuana.
All right, great documentary footage there from Nick Adenow, and he's got more coming out, a part 4 that'll be available soon. We'll bring that to you just as soon as we can. Stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We've got a K2 Investigators piece, Cannabis in the Classroom, that requires some thorough debunking. Also features our friend Dr. Amanda Ryman. She's one of the folks from Drug Policy Alliance. We'll be here in Oregon. I think she's in Portland now, as a matter of fact, to be here for Measure 91 and the celebration. Remember, election night, this is the place to be, 420radio.org. Tell your friends, get the TuneIn app for your smartphone if you want to listen on the go. We'll bring you live election night coverage, the first results from all across this great country, right here on 420radio.org. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers!
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.